I use my old iPhone as a camera and also as a dev device. It's an iPhone 12 Pro Max, and as a camera, it works really nicely. I bought just a cheap MagSafe connector that I sort of disassembled and attached with zip ties to the bottom of my screen, to the back of the screen. And it's on a little telescopic rod. So I like pull it down and my phone sort of appears below at the bottom of my monitor, and I can push it back up again and goes up behind the monitor, which is really nice. It's a little bit indulgent of me to use an entire iPhone for just my camera and webcam. But I really like some of the features that you get when you use the iPhone as a camera. On the latest macOS, there's the camera icon in the menu bar, and when you click on that, you can use center stage and portrait mode and change your studio lighting and even zoom in and out on the camera, like move around. Yeah, so I really like it. And it doubles up as a development device for me, so I'll pull it off its little MagSafe stand and prop it up next to me when I'm doing dev work.
I have a iPhone 12 Pro that was my wife's, which I've used as a webcam as well. But I get a little bit annoyed that I've got to have it set up. I have a laptop on a stand, and so I have a tripod that I'll put it on so that I can use it as a webcam. But then once a week on Tuesdays, my son has piano practice with Luke, and so I try to use that iPhone for that, and I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to move the stupid thing around every week. I'm just going to leave it in his room. So my son does not have an iPhone, but he has an iPhone for that 1 half-hour period every week, which I've been too lazy to use the last 3 weeks in a row. So we're using an iPad Pro and the iPhone so that on the weeks where I'm not too lazy, Luke can see Ethan from two angles. So I guess that'd be a question for you, Luke. What would work better there?
So have you tried setting it up on top of the piano and using the desk view camera mode?
I'm still, you know, it's kind of tricky. I've experimented with a lot of stuff, but honestly, like 95% of the time in Zoom, I'm just sharing my screen, because once I'm sharing my screen, it lets audio pass through like right from my desktop. So I have my keyboard routed through my, you use the audio, what is it, like the MIDI audio driver app that's built into Mac. Anyways, you can create aggregate outputs and whatever. So anyways, I've routed main stage through Zoom, so I have to share my screen for that all to work. So then like 95% I'm sharing my screen and showing him like music and having him listen to my piano and stuff like that. So it makes the Zoom video of him really small and tiny. So I honestly can't really see much from his hands much anyways.
So it's not, all right, that saves me some effort. If it's not helpful, that's actually great to know.
Sorry. Well, I never say anything because I'm like, there's always the chance that like maybe I could de-share my screen and pull that up.
Yeah.
And it is helpful, especially at his level. So honestly, take it or leave it.
Good to know.
Well, anyways, welcome everybody to episode 24. And we're, okay, I'm going to start over.
Roll with it. That was great.
I know. I got distracted by the Apple 2 thumbs up fireworks. Can I do that with this?
Well, do it. Yeah.
So fun. If you haven't tried this yet on your Apple webcam, do 2 thumbs up. You'll be in for a surprise.
Yeah, watch this on your ready.
That works too.
You got to do it emphatically, Luke. You got to really own it.
Yeah, try it.
My computer will not respond to the bird.
Okay, so apparently
Sadia's been abusing his computer.
Sadia is able to flip off the camera, but Luke cannot. We got to investigate why.
What if I do two? I'm going to do two hands.
All right, hold on. Does it work? Nothing?
Maybe it's an Australia thing. Does it mean something different in Australia?
No, come on, guys. I'm just playing with you. You can force the reactions.
Right, Luke to flip you off a few bunch of times. All right.
Like, I was just cool. Pressing the button.
Okay, well, okay, getting into it. Welcome, everyone. This is episode 24 of Ultra Pro Max. This is the podcast where we talk about app development and the Apple ecosystem. Sadia recently went on a trip, passport plugin for WordPress.
Yes, I went on a trip to Taiwan for a WordPress conference. As you guys know, some of my strong opinions about the App Store and the plugin ecosystem come from the fact that I am a contributor to the WordPress plugin review team, which is in itself its own kind of app store. I feel like it gives me a bit of an interesting insight into what it might be like to run an app store, since we're making some of the rules. Actually, it made me wonder whether or not WordPress has more than enough users in the European Union to warrant
Once you pass a certain amount of users, you fall under a different level of regulation with the new Digital Markets Act. Is that what you're talking about?
Digital Markets Act. Yeah, that would be a fun little exercise. I hope we're going to talk about that today, because that's a whole thing. Anyway, but at this WordPress conference, I got to meet none other than Ben Thompson from Stratechery, who we have quoted at length in this podcast before. Amongst other things, he is one of the co-hosts of Dithering. I believe he's the president.
Yep. I think Gruber's the CEO, if I got that correctly.
That's right. And so, yeah, got to meet him, say hello briefly, and listen to his talk. He is launching Passport as a service. So Passport, at the moment, Passport is like a digital subscription for Stratechery. It's just for Stratechery. When you sign up for Stratechery, you can enable texts on your account, enable specific podcasts, and various different distribution methods, email and the web, and have all of that delivered to you. And it's always been Stratechery only, but it was really cool. At this trip, he announced that he's going to make Passport open source, or at least large chunks of it open source, and launch that as a service as well.
I am so excited about this. Also, I was absolutely so happy when you were texting me that you got to meet him. That was so exciting. I have been wanting something like Passport for a while now because I've been a user of it. And then I want to create stuff on WordPress, and I keep running into issues where I'm not finding a plugin that I love that does what I want, and I think Passport could work for my use case. So I'm excited to see it go live. I signed up for the beta or whatever and looking forward to testing it.
So this helps you manage your membership and subscriptions and stuff for various content creation via WordPress?
With quite a bit of flexibility, so that let's say you have some free content, some paid, you want to have newsletters go out, you want to have podcasts be paid or free. You just want that ability to have it all managed under one roof. And this is something that Ben Thompson has been using for years as his own software. And I've been a paying user of that. So yeah, it's not unique. There's other things out there that do it, but I'm excited to try this version of it.
It's so fun to have the time to be able to just create your own solution for the world's biggest problems. And then one day release it for the rest of us plebeians. That's so cool.
It's pretty great. And from what I understand, it's been a bit of a journey for him to get it up to this point. So the talk will be released. I'm sure we'll share it in the show notes once it comes out. I want to watch that. That was Jonathan, another friend of ours, Tammy, and Sadia all got to meet him at this conference in Taiwan. So that's pretty cool.
That's epic. Well, Joshua, your email habits have been an ongoing saga. How is that developing?
This podcast partially exists for me just to air my grievances. That's why we're here, right?
Yep.
Yeah, otherwise there's no point. So I have been good about checking my email during the week about once or twice a day. I think Sadia's advice was good. There's some times where there's just enough personal or business-related things where it's good to maybe check twice a day. So I've been doing once or twice a day. And I have been loving it. I checked my email on Friday afternoon, did not check again until this mid-morning on Monday. I love it. I feel that a little bit of the craziness of my life is reduced a tiny bit by not checking email so often. But that comes with a frustration point. I have been a heavy 1Password user for many years. I love managing my own passwords, and for now, the solution works. So many things I log into do not allow me to use a password. They require me to send an email where a login link gets sent to my email from the service. So for instance, I'm logging into hover.com to check my email or my domains. And it says, hey, we just sent you a login link to your email. That is so annoying to me because my whole point is during the day when I'm trying to do things, I don't want to be checking email now. So I've even gone to the lengths of, for some of these accounts, I have it go to a different email address that I don't check often because I don't want to check email.
Wow.
And I whenever I have the option to put a password in, I do, but some services do not allow it, and that just annoys me.
What do you use for your email?
I use Hey at the moment for email, and then I have an old Gmail which forwards into Hey, so I'll go check that Gmail for the ones I've modified to be specifically for the Gmail.
Gotcha.
So on macOS and iOS, if you use the native mail app there, then you know how when you get a text, there's that autofill option in the autofill bar that autofills the one-time
yep.
code?
It's so useful. I love it.
That works also with emails, although obviously it won't work for a link if you have to click in a link. But if it's just emailing you a code, that could be a solution there if you were willing to switch email providers. Personally, I dislike Hey, but each to their own. I mean, if they could only spell inbox correctly, I think that might be enough.
I'll bet you could write a little script to just change that whenever you look at it, that yeah. it will be modified.
Yeah,
a plug for Arc. You could do that with an Arc boost pretty easily. So,
oh, so like a quick, basically changing the DOM.
Yeah,
or in a way you can just make
a
modification.
Yeah, you can create boosts that do everything. You can create your own little CSS defaults to change the theme of a website. You can zap elements out of a website that you don't like if you're on Instagram and you hate stories, you can just zap the stories module out of Instagram, and then you can get more sophisticated with your own little script that could do something like that. I'm pretty sure.
I've never stuck to Arc, but that alone has me intrigued. There's so many parts of websites that I just despise, but I still go there. I'm not even talking about the ads. I'm just talking about like this feature I'm never going to use. I don't want to see it. This gets into a bigger problem. I was thinking over, Sadia is often annoyingly right, so I'm trying not to give ground on this one yet. mail.app, I get the value, but I don't actually want to have an app on my devices that can check my email. I want to require myself to enter a username and password to give myself a little bit of friction and not check as often. So that is very much a me problem. But I love having to go to a website to log into a janky interface, see email, and then take care of it.
Fair enough. I feel like you're getting to this point like as an alcoholic and you've hired your own like personal bodyguard and thrown away the key. And then your guard's job is to keep you out of the bar at all costs.
I have seriously considered giving my wife the password and not letting her, like, don't give it back to me until I'm ready to check again, just because that's how ridiculous it's gotten with checking email. But then I realize, all right, I do have a problem. There's something a little bit bigger than this I got to figure out.
Oh, some underlying things there. The iPad mini, is it useless? Cold segue.
So someone said on the last, by the way, good job. You did a total 180 segue that was
nailed. I know, I'm really
nailed.
Trying.
Like, I'm proud of you. I think Sadia said who said the iPad mini is useless, because I want to hear
did.
That take.
It was not me. It was me.
Okay. All right. So Luke, you could have saved me asking around. All right. I want to hear your thoughts, and then I do have some thoughts as well. And like iPad sizes are so fascinating to discuss. So I'm curious just your general thoughts on sizes, why you don't like that one, and then I have some thoughts
I don't know if my opinion is that deep, honestly. It's too big to be a phone, and it's too small to do anything that you would want to have a tablet to do. So, like, what are you carrying? Is this just for women to carry around in small purses? If that's the case, fine, but still useless for me. I don't, like, you know, I'm going to have a bag to carry it around, so I might as well carry around a larger tablet. No? Also, the 640px breakpoint, the worst. No one likes designing for that thing.
All right. I like when Luke has a strong opinion. That's great. So what I do is, I think I showed you this, right? How I use it. I'm holding it up to the camera. So I have a hand strap on it, and I can hold it like this so that I can draw on it with the other hand. And it's perfect. It's like holding a little notebook in my hand. That's the only reason I like this size, is because I don't have to have it at a desk. I can use it almost like a field note little pad. And that I can't do with the larger sizes. So this is the one reason I like the mini, that I can hold it in one hand and draw in the other hand.
Are you like going around to warehouses and like scribbling down what you're seeing on the barcodes of warehouses? Like why do you need to be this mobile, I guess is my question.
So no, it's at my desk. I actually will sit at my desk, and I don't like to lean over for an hour to sketch out a UI for an app. That's not great for my neck. I want to have myself positioned like this. So I'd rather, and I'm holding up the iPad, I'll hold it up a little bit and I'll look down and I'll draw on it like I was drawing on a little notebook. That's different than if I had it flat on the surface of the desk, and that forces my entire shoulder angle to move forward. So it's a bit of an ergonomic type thing wherever I'm at, because I've had all sizes of iPads. I've even bought a draft table-esque type tool that props it up. But at the end of the day, I love the mini with that for drawing, essentially.
Oh, I can get behind that. Honestly, we could do a whole spinoff conversation on ergonomics. I've been starting to work a lot more hours lately, and am I starting to feel it in my upper back and neck.
Okay, basic questions. What's your setup? Describe it.
I've got the classic laptop with a browser with the monitor above the laptop. And now that it's a 15-inch laptop, the monitor has gotten higher. And so, yeah, I know that's not good. I'm doing this look down at the laptop, or like I'm still looking down, and then I tilt my head up to look at the monitor.
So I'm going to pull forward a comment that I was going to share for the end of the show. I have found that I can do, it's not great, but I can use a laptop as long as it's on a Roost laptop stand or some kind of a laptop stand that gets it elevated where the top of the laptop is at my eye level, then it's fine. And then I use a keyboard and a mouse, external keyboard and mouse. And that's a pretty decent setup. I've written about this. What I cannot do is a laptop plus a large monitor. I've never found an ergonomic way to have it. Either the laptop's if it's a tiny laptop, sure, it could be at the bottom, but I could keep running into that problem. Where do you put this little screen in connection to the big screen? So for me, I can only do, and I've tried so many times, either one big screen, two big screens, or one laptop. Those are the only combinations that I've found are decent ergonomically for me. And I make sure that laptop is at eye level, because if you're looking down 7 hours a day, that's horrible for your neck.
This sort of works in with the iPad mini conversation, because I, in the past, have used my laptop as this sort of ancillary display. I have it off to the left of my main display, but it only shows, you know, the current music that's playing, or maybe is a quick spot to put some notes, that sort of thing. At the moment, though, I have it clamshelled because I can use my iPad for that. Now, the iPad Pro, you'd think more screen real estate would be better, right? But actually, it doesn't work out that way, because it kind of gets awkward. I like to use Stage Manager, and then I've got multiple windows overlapping, or like one area by itself is too big for an app and there's lots of wasted space. Or if you're going to put two apps together, there's not quite enough space. And I think the iPad Mini is the perfect size in that regard. If you're using it like I do, as a secondary, not a secondary display, but more like an auxiliary display, you know, like a little side informational display, then it's going to have just my music. Maybe I keep Slack on there when I don't really want to be running Slack, but I just want to keep half an eye on what's going on. Maybe, Joshua, you'd hate this, but maybe I have my emails. I don't get that many emails just happening on it. Although, to be honest, probably not. Just little side things that I don't really, they're not my main thing. And if I notice a change, I'm probably actually just going to open mail on my main computer and put it on my main display. But it's just there as a little helper display. And that's what I use the iPad Pro for, which I think would be much better on the iPad Mini, which is what I'm planning to get as soon as it comes out. It didn't come out, though, and I'm kind of hoping that it would. But
I was so sad. I'm ready. Like, Apple, I will for all my money, if it's got an M1 and an iPad Mini and you've changed nothing else, like, I'm game.
So anyway, back to setups. I kind of agree with you, Joshua, but I think the laptop to the side thing can work if it's just showing your music there and a few little, like your sticky notes and things like that.
Yes, if you're using it as occasional reference, it's not bad for the neck, right? But if you are needing it to actually function and work, I've found that it's too hard on my neck, too hard on my shoulders. So I've been there, Luke. I went to Costco a week or two ago, and for the first time, I got to touch with my own hands the Apple Studio display. Oh, wow. It is so nice. It's so gorgeous. It's just this beautiful device that is way too much money. But I got to thinking, would I rather two of those or the Apple Vision Pro? And at the moment, no question, I would take two of those. Because wow. I've having this big blurry things glued to my face versus having big, gorgeous real estate on my desk. So I think I've recommitted myself to saving up for that. It was just, it's so nice. I'd love two of those on my desk. I'll settle for one for now. And I also want to do the upgrade where I can do the monitor raise and lower, because if I'm at a standing desk height, I need it high enough. And that 5K display. So yes, that is my goal. I don't know if I'll be able to hit it this year.
Is it just the resolution that, you know, and just the beauty of the display itself, or are there other features that are making it gorgeous for you?
The main point is the fact that it's a 5K resolution. And the way that Apple is set up is if you have a 4K resolution, what you're getting is a bit of weirdness with the UI. It wasn't designed for that. So 5K is actually double the pixels, essentially. So from a designer standpoint, it's the most clean display of that size. It's 27 inches 5K. Almost everything else on the market except for one thing from Samsung is 4K for that size, which means you're having slightly blurry pixels, and at the moment that still makes a difference for my eyes. I can see the difference.
Oh, that's interesting. So it's just mathematically how it works out, the screen proportions to the pixels and how the design breakpoints all work with that.
Yes, and you're getting essentially double the pixels, and that's a big enough deal for me that I don't want to settle, so I want to save up for that.
Wow. Well, there goes my bank account for the next 2 years if I want to get the good stuff. That and the Vision Pro, I both looked at those and just like scoffed at them on the onset, right? I'm like, who on earth is going to pay $1,600 for a simple display? Because it's not like a Mac, it's not like the old iMacs or anything. It's not a computer, right? It's just a display.
It's only a display. Now, technically, it actually has an A chip in it, so it functionally has like an iPad computer in it, just because that's the overkill at this point. But it is merely a display, but it is for LG has the equivalent, and it broke on me, and I've swore to myself I will never, ever trust them again with the display because they failed me in every way from a service perspective. So you can buy the actual panel from other companies, but I'm also paying a little bit more because LG's is like $1,300. I'm paying a little more because I know if it breaks, Apple will take care of me. I have got an experience there that I could get it under warranty fixed. And then the machined metal body, the beautiful aluminum case.
It is gorgeous.
Like, you are paying a bit of a premium for that.
Yeah. Let's talk about tools that mere mortals can afford, namely search engines. Check in on search engines. What are we using?
Yeah, I'll start with me. I put this in because I want to know what you both are on these days. I've been trying to use DuckDuckGo for the last year and mostly succeeding with it. And the way it works is it's based off of Bing's engine, I believe. So it's a small service that sits as a layer on top, and you type in duck.com or put it as your default in your browsers, and it's 10 blue links. It does basically what Google did 10 years ago, and without all the cruft. I've found that it's simple, quiet, mostly finds what I need, but then occasionally if I can't find something, I'll type exclamation point G, which brings you to Google's. They'll just push you to Google, and I'll use that a couple times a day. But I have found when I really need to find out something, I only trust Google. However, I also know Google will give me stuff I don't want to see. They'll have all the SEO crap. They'll have all the advertisements, all this. And so I'm in a world where DuckDuckGo is fine. Google is annoying, but actually better. And I don't know. I wish there was like a Google that was like YouTube where you premium, where you pay for it and get rid of the ads. I would love a version of Google where pay a couple bucks, get rid of the ads. So I'm curious what you guys use.
I use Kagi, or Kagi. I think it's Kagi, which I know is fairly well loved inside of Apple dev circles. I think it's fantastic, fantastic search engine. Not only are the search results better than Google, in my opinion, and certainly better than DuckDuckGo, it also has a bunch of features that I'm learning to not be able to live without. So with DuckDuckGo, you have the bangs, and thankfully, Kagi also has bangs, the quick searches. I never use bang G for Google, but I frequently use bang W for Wikipedia or bang AAU for Amazon Australia and things like that.
I never thought to do that. There's so many times I just want Wikipedia's answer. Oh, that's yep. Great.
I mean, you can do that with DuckDuckGo. So that's not specific to Kagi, but it is not on Google. And of course, you don't have any ads whatsoever. It's completely private. There's a bunch of other really cool features. Like, I really like the way it will group listicles together in your search results. So you don't get like all of your search results are all these various top 10 WordPress plugins. It's all of those are grouped together in one little section of here's all of your listicles. And you can choose those if you want to or just skip past them. It also has this thing called lenses, which I use a bit. So you have something like this on Google where it's like Google search the news. It's on DuckDuckGo too, or search Twitter, I think, specifically social media sites and things like this. Kagi has this also, but it has a couple of lenses that are unique, which I love. One is that you can search Fediverse forums like Mastodon and things like that. Which is really nice. And the other is that there's like a small web lens. So you can limit your search to the small web, you know, like small blogs and individuals. And I use that also a lot, especially when I'm kind of interested for a different take than, if I'm searching for some advice, sometimes I don't want all of those like articles that seem they were written by an AI or... professionally published journalists. I just kind of want to know what some person thinks somewhere on the web. Anyway, so I found the search results of Kagi are really, really high quality, has some really, really nice features. What's the catch? Well, it's $10 a month. I think there's a $5 tier, but I pay for the $10 tier, which gives me unlimited searches. And I think you should be paying for search. You know, like it's such an important part of the web. I think you probably pay more than $10 just in your advertising exposure.
That's really good to hear because I've looked at Kagi. I've been like, all right, I don't know if this is another SaaS I'm willing to pay for, but I'm glad to hear your use case. And I was actually just checking, okay, there is a Safari extension I can download that would allow me to have it the default because, yeah, it's premium. Mm-hmm. No, that's great.
I was talking to someone else, and we're just talking about how we're big nerds and use ad blockers and how only big nerds use ad blockers. And they said that they installed Pi-hole, you know, which is like a ad blocker for your whole network on their home network, so that their partner and their kids all had an ad blocker running by default at the router level. And I said, oh, yeah, that's a cool idea. That's nice. And he said, yeah, you know what I found? I was really surprised. We keep a close track of our spending, and our spending dropped by 40%. And then I did an experiment. I removed the pie hole, and sure enough, our spending grew again by exactly that same amount.
What?
And then when I put it back on, it dropped again.
All right, you...
So what this makes me think is that I think maybe using Kagi is cheaper than using Google.
Wow. But Sadia, then I'm not getting all this cool stuff that I don't need.
All right, I'm looking at Pi-hole. Oh, man, that is interesting. Because I know my wife and I are not immune to advertisements. We buy all kinds of things. And, yeah, what if we had less advertisements? Would we spend less? Probably.
Huh. That's fascinating. I just got Kagi.
So what do you use, Luke?
I... I use Google currently. I did mess around with DuckDuckGo for a little bit. I really hate that I still use Google. I just really like that when I type something in, it's very good about giving me a little, you know, widget at the top that tells me exactly what I need. Like, I'm not even really looking at the results themselves. I'm just looking at what Google is telling me about something. But that being said, the reason I don't want to use Google is I listened to Joe Rogan had a podcast with Robert Epstein back in January of 2022. And Robert Epstein is a guy that has done like empirical studies on the Google search browser and then also on other browsers, I think other browsers that use the Google index, right? Or browsers, also search engines. So other search engines that use the Google index are not immune to Google's reach. So he's been running, and I don't want to do him injustice. Maybe we should just put it in the show notes. But basically he just went on and on with all this, you know, quote unquote empirical evidence, because they ran trials with blind users on blind search engines, et cetera, to track what they were being served, right? And it would get to the point where they would notice that as soon as those devices were pegged as being watched by the study, they would suddenly be served neutral results and they wouldn't be served anything, right? So it seems like there's a lot of kind of subversive stuff that Google is doing with their search engine, et cetera. So I, you know, kind of want to get away from that. But like I said, I love how easy it is. So the only reason I use Google is because of those little widgets and the things that it tells me outside of the results themselves. So now I'm thinking like, and this may seem kind of counterintuitive, but what about all these AI browsers that are coming out? Now, if I'm worried about being fed something, why on earth would I go to an AI? That's a great question. So honest, there's some cognitive dissonance in my head. But at the same time, like, Perplexity is really cool. Arc is coming out with this thing here soon. They have the Arc Search app, which is a browse for me essentially. And it'll scour the web for you, give you a little synopsis of what you're wanting to learn, and then it'll give you all the links, etc. I think the Arc browser is even coming out with this thing here soon where you don't even need to touch the search engine. Pretty soon you'll be able to just type into their new tab bar, like, tell me about how to make this apple pie or whatever. And then it just creates a new little tab folder for you with like five tabs in it, you know, that kind of a thing. So there's a lot of people that I think are just trying to kind of circumvent the search engine entirely. And maybe, you know, if I need to research politics or something more controversial, I'll go to DuckDuckGo or something that is not, I don't even know if DuckDuckGo is not using the Google indexes, but just something that's not using the Google indexes. But other than that, you know, plug me into the mainframe, baby.
I was trying out something that I heard recommended. I don't remember from who, but it's basically Fast ChatGPT, and I'll put it into the show notes here, that if you start, and you can try this now, if you start doing like cat wearing mittens, it will return in the milliseconds the quickest variation of a design of that. And suddenly, it starts to change how you think of and use a service like ChatGPT. And this is something that Ben Thompson's been talking about, that if you can improve the speed, it might change how we think of using products like this. And yes, you have the question about the company putting their thumbs on the scale, but what if you were searching, it came back instantly with an answer? So the fact that it can generate these AI images in what I perceive as instantly, that's pretty amazing. So I wonder with these GPT style search engines and et cetera, if they can figure out how to do it very fast, will that be good enough for some of us?
One of the things that Kaggy does is it does have like an integrated GPT in it as well. Like, it has what it calls Fast GPT, which is experimental. And then on the most premium plan, it integrates the LLM directly with the search results, which is pretty cool, I reckon.
What do you mean it integrates it directly with the search results?
Well, in addition to your regular little bits of information like, you know, calculations and dates and Wikipedia previews and all of those little blocks, which you get with Google, also with Kaggy. On the most premium plan, when you do a search that makes sense for it to also run through an LLM, you'll get the LLM result at the very top and the search results below.
Gotcha.
Automatically.
That's cool. And it's fast?
Yes. it's fast. It's not as good quality. That's the thing. Not as high quality as ChatGPT, but it's very fast.
Wow.
This is a side tangent. Are you guys paying for ChatGPT 4?
Yeah.
I am, but I'm really thinking about changing to Opus. Is it Opus? Something like that. I'm thinking about signing up for Anthropic. I had some problems with my account there or something and trying to sign up on
Claude
iOS
3.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Trying to sign up there was a bit of a pain, so I sort of gave up, but I might give it another shot since it's supposed to be much better at solving programming problems, considerably better than ChatGPT 4, and that's what I use it mostly for.
Interesting. I may have to get a...
So, yeah, I'm interested in Claude. I've heard some interesting stuff from them, self-proclaimed over the last couple of weeks. I've been doing ChatGPT 4 on a monthly subscription, so I'll pause and I'll turn it off, and then I realize I want it again a month later, and so I turn it back on, I turn it off, and I just keep using it to see if it can become something I really want in my life. And it seems that there's enough times that my wife or I benefit from it that we keep using it.
Yeah, that's kind of what I've thought. I was like, well, I'll just turn it off, and when I need to use it, I'll just pay $20 again and then get to enjoy it for a month. But it's going to happen more than once a month that you're going to want to use it, I'm sure. Also, I just noticed this. I didn't know this before, but when I got ChatGPT 4 like a month ago because I wanted to generate some images for a little meme card for my grandma. Anyways, so I didn't know this before, but ChatGPT 4 can run Python scripts. Like it can generate a script and then run it inside ChatGPT 4, mm-hmm. which I've always said, okay, AI is scary and all, but like it's a large language model. It can't do logic calculations, etc. But which was kind of a dumb little consolation for myself. But yeah, literally now the production version, write the script, run the script. If you ask it any kind of math question whatsoever, the little loader thing shows up running a Python script. Like if you ask it, what's 37 times 4? Like it's going to run a little Python script to do that math for you. No longer is it using predictive text to do math and logic. It is just going to predictively generate the code and then run that.
Yeah, that's really neat.
It's neat. But I've always said, we're safe from AI because it can't do logic very well yet. But here we are. So
the answer is 148, by the way, according to ChatGPT. And there's an analysis of how they reach that via the Python script.
Yeah, exactly. Anytime there's some math.
That's great. It was about 30 times slower than a calculator, but it was correct.
So I wish I were still taking calculus or something and I could ask it some more higher order math problems. But I've, so far removed from that world that I wouldn't know how to check it myself. Well, that about does it for us today. Thank you all so much for joining us for another episode. We would love to hear from you and turn this one-way comm into a two-way communication. If you could give us an email at email@ultrapromax.fm, shoot us some suggestion topics and, maybe rip us to shreds over what we said, we would love to hear it. And with that, it's been great talking to you too, and we'll see you guys next week.